It's hour four of First Off. This is TSN 1050. Joan Osborne, What If God Was One of Us? Beautiful song, an homage to Mitch Marner, his comments yesterday about the Leafs being gods in the city, which is out of context. You know, Mitch was trying to make a point that the Toronto Raptors had a ton of success, and they are revered in the city, which is absolutely true.
When you win in this city, you will become a god. Mm-hmm.
Until then, yes. Not so much.
Until
but that
then,
song, beautiful. Beautiful song.
You're idolized. You're idolized because you're a role model, but you're not viewed as a god. Simple as that.
No, it's true. It's true. So, yeah, we'll see how that goes. We'll hear some of our conversation with TSN Hockey Insider Chris Johnston in about 25 minutes. On the subject of questionable commentary coming out of the end of a season, in the NBA, Jimmy Butler, not sure if you saw this, took some shots at the Boston Celtics and the New York Knicks, saying that they would be home if he hadn't been injured. Remember, Jimmy missed, I guess, pretty much the entire playoff run for Miami with that MCL injury.
He played one game, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So Pat Riley, the president of the Miami Heat, comes out yesterday, and let's just say he was not a fan of what Jimmy Butler had to say.
You know, for him to say that, you know, I thought, is that Jimmy trolling or is that Jimmy serious? You know, if you're not on the court playing against Boston or on the court playing against the New York Knicks, you should keep your mouth shut.
Wow.
That's Pat Riley.
A shot at Jimmy Butler saying that he should have toughened out his injury.
Well, I don't know if he's saying that necessarily, but he's saying that if you're not on the court, shut your mouth. Don't talk because you have no part in that series and the result of it. And maybe what Butler is saying is true. If that he was playing, the result may have been different, but he didn't play and the result wasn't different. So until you do, and we did see it, you know, we've seen Miami go on amazing runs with Jimmy Butler as their top dog, and maybe it could happen again. But I can't imagine, knowing what I know about NBA players, that's going to be responded to well by Jimmy Butler. Even if it's from Pat Riley, who's one of the greatest of all time. Coach, manager, everything like that, player. But, ooh, he should shut his mouth. Like, wow, I love that. I love that. That's just refreshing, really. Like, the way that athletes are coddled in this day and age, to hear somebody, a president of a team, come out and just tear into his best player. I love that. That brings back some good... good vibes to me when we all maybe right in the sports world once again. And Pat Riley leading the charge.
It'll surprise everybody when Jimmy Butler comes out and says, I want to be traded.
Exactly.
Now.
I bet you that comes out next.
He'll disrespect.
That's probably tomorrow. That's probably tomorrow Jimmy Butler requests the trade from the Miami Heat. Elsewhere in the NBA last night, we saw the Knicks beat the Pacers 121-117. They lead the series 1-0, and in that game, there was a lot of controversy at the end with an illegal screen that was called on the Pacers, and Josh Hart of the Knicks spoke post-game in a question and answer with a reporter on what makes him tired, and here's how that sounded.
Like, what is a thing in life, even unrelated to basketball?
Probably us.
No, my wife arguing with me. That makes me extremely tired. Dude, we can relate.
Can you relate to that, Carlo?
Amen. Amen, buddy. Amen. Yes, that sucks. That absolutely sucks. I think it's nonsense.
What is?
That has to happen.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Getting tired with arguing with your wife.
Is Gina tired of arguing with you?
Probably, yeah.
Okay, well.
Yeah.
Sometimes athletes are relatable. It happens. It's love.
It happens.
It's love. It's not always seamless. There's ebbs and flows. Arguing, yes. Definitely makes Josh Hart tired. Not playing 40-plus minutes.
Love.
Yes. 40-plus minutes in an NBA game, not it. But arguing with his wife is it. Well, talk to Ian Mendez from The Athletic about the Ottawa Senators. Potentially they'll have a new head coach as early as tomorrow and the draft lottery tonight. That's next. Hour four continues. You're listening to TSN 1050. I'm Aaron Korolnik. It's Carlo Kuliakovo. I'm sure that the heartbreak of the Toronto Maple Leafs' departure from the postseason is felt all across this province, and in Ottawa especially, where they are just heartbroken that the Leafs are out of the playoffs. I'm sure the tears have been flowing in the nation's capital all week long. Let's welcome in our good friend Ian Mendez, who covers all things NHL for The Athletic. Am I correct in my assumption, Ian?
Guys, you know what? It's one of those misery loves company deals, and it's a great argument, isn't it? Like, which fan base should be more miserable? Is it the one that hasn't made the playoffs since 2017 in Ottawa and can't get over the hump, or is it the one in Toronto that repeatedly makes the playoffs but can't get over the first round hump? It's a great debate right now.
Maybe both. I think the answer is both franchises should be in a state of sadness, and definitely the fan bases as well.
No, but you can't have both. You can't have both. Yeah, you gotta pick one.
I would say Ottawa should be in a little bit more of a sad state. At least the Leafs have the regular seasons. They have the milestones and the accomplishments there, and then you get to Game 7, and you pretty much know what happens, as it did on Saturday night. In Ottawa, things, have not gone according to plan. But there is new management in place, and it sounds like a new head coach could be in place here in the very near future here, Ian, with Travis Green potentially stepping behind the bench. What has the reaction been in Ottawa about that idea?
I'll tell you, Darren Dreger's tweet yesterday, it was like a bomb went off in this market. And that
in a good way or bad way?
And if I'm reading the room, in a bad way. But that is a function of 7 years of missing the playoffs, pent-up anger, and a fan base that I think was hoping, well, maybe it'll be Craig Berube or maybe a big-name coach. And so it almost didn't matter. Anybody under Berube, who wasn't Berube, I think would have been met with some degree of skepticism. You know, Todd McClellan, people would have said, yeah, but he's never gone really deep in the playoffs. Dean Evason, people would have said the same thing. Like a lot of the names on the list outside of Berube, I think would have been met with a degree of skepticism, but Green, I think, was really met in this market with skepticism, because guys, about 10 days ago, he wasn't even on the radar. Like when you poked around, you listened to names that were in the mix, he didn't really come onto the scene until about 8 days ago. And really, when you think about it, I think a lot of people were like, well, hang on, you were just the interim coach in New Jersey, and if the Devils don't think you're good enough and their program's at a point where they feel like they're ready to compete, like, if you're not good enough for them, why are you good enough for us? And so that's really the way it's being met in this market. But you can't blame the fans, because it's been 7 years of frustration and anger, and now you're bringing in a coach who, like, I'm willing to give him some runway here, but his winning percentage in Vancouver wasn't great. And so I understand the frustration in the marketplace. And when you're told to kind of wait and see, I think Ottawa fans are like, hey, we've played the patient game long enough around here.
Do you think a lot of that reaction has to do with the fact that he was part of those Toronto-Ottawa battles in the playoffs, where he was a member of the Maple Leafs as well and doesn't really have much Ottawa ties?
Well, I think that's part of it. Like, if you're old enough, you remember Travis Green in 01, 02, 02, 03 played in kind of the height of the Battle of Ontario. And he was a central figure in a couple of incidents. And you think about the night Darcy Tucker went into the Ottawa bench, and I think that was the 02, 03 season. That whole play, that whole sequence was initiated by Travis Green, who hit Shane Knighty behind the bench and kind of skated by the Ottawa bench and was pointing at Chris Neal. And all of a sudden, Darcy, I'll never forget, comes kind of out of out of the blue and jumps in the Ottawa bench. And, you know, Travis Green was a catalyst for that moment. Travis Green was the guy on the night when Daniel Alfredson hit Darcy Tucker Game 5 of the 0-2 playoffs at Air Canada Center. It was Travis Green, who in the locker room after the game said, this is a bloody joke. Like, he called the Alfredson hit a bloody joke. So, like, absolutely there'll be, I think, an element of, if you're old enough and you remember, they kind of, you know, you almost lumped, in this market, you lumped Travis Green together with Darcy Tucker, Shane Corson, mm-hmm. Ty Domi, right? It was that kind of bottom six that just agitated you to no end. But
and especially with the alumni there, with Chris Neal, Chris Phillips, Alfredson. I mean, they were all part of that too. And now this guy's going to be the coach of that team. Crazy.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you know, should that be a factor? No, but I do think that there's going to be some like a reconciliation, or people are going to have to sort of, you know, figure out how they balance those old emotions and anger that they had towards Travis Green as a player, and sort of put those aside and give him a fresh slate as a head coach.
Ian Mendes, our guest, who covers the NHL and the Ottawa Senators for The Athletic. My sources are telling me that Green's lead assistants will be Nick Antropov and Alexei Ponikarovsky as well. So that would be something. That was a good joke for me, actually. Ian, I'm actually impressed with myself. Kudos to me. The NHL draft lottery tonight, Ottawa has the 7th best odds at the number one overall pick. Of course, expected, widely expected to be Macklin Celebrini out of Boston. Is there a lot of apprehension in the market? Like, if you get Celebrini in Ottawa, I mean, could be a game changer, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think when you go in with the 7th best odds, you don't necessarily think, I think they have like a 6.5% chance of getting it, of winning the lottery. I don't think you go into it tonight feeling like we're going to win the lottery, especially like if you look at it historically. Ottawa's actually never moved up in the draft lottery. All the years that they've been in the rebuild and all the years that they've been in this process, they've actually never moved up. They've moved down. They've stayed pat. They've never moved up. So, yeah, I think like they have right now, if you look at their and whether it's you look at through our lens at The Athletic or you look at anybody else who judges prospect pools, the Ottawa Senators are at the bottom of the heap. Like when you look at where Ottawa's prospect pool is, they are 29th, 30th, 31st in most people's rankings. And they're hanging out with the Tampa Bays and, you know, all these teams that have been great contenders over the last few years who have traded away picks, who have traded away prospects to get good. Well, Ottawa's done that. Remember, they traded away their first-round pick in 2022 to get Alex DeBrincat. That was 7th overall. They traded their first overall pick last year to get Jacob Chychrun. Like, these are all win-now moves. And so when you deplete the cupboard, you have nothing left. So you hope against hope that somehow, if you get Celebrini, I think a lot of the conversation and chatter about Ottawa's pipeline being barren, I don't think one guy changes it completely, but at least you can say, okay, now we have a legitimate blue-chip prospect we can hang our hat on. And that'll take away some of the angst when it comes to the prospect system.
Ian, when you're trying to evaluate this offseason for the Ottawa Senators, obviously the biggest decision for them is going to be who's going to coach this team. And with all reports leading to Travis Green being that guy, what do you think is the next order of business for this team? Where do they need to focus a lot of their attention to make this team competitive, more competitive into next season?
The two things, guys, are, and this probably goes for, I mean, it sounds like I'm describing the Maple Leafs here, is that you need to address the blue line, you need to address the goaltending, and maybe some bottom six stuff, right? Like, doesn't that feel like that's everybody's wish list?
Yeah.
And, you know, for Ottawa, the interesting thing is they've got three defensemen in Jake Sanderson, Thomas Chabot, and Jacob Chychrun, who, you know, realistically could play in your top four, right? Or should play in your top four. The problem is all three of those guys are left shot D. And I think it's a situation where it doesn't fit. Like, the puzzle pieces don't quite fit. So that, to me, is the biggest question mark about this team. What is Steve Staios and Dave Poulin and that management group, what are they thinking about? Like, Sanderson's a non-negotiable. He's locked in. He's the number one guy. He's on an 8-year deal that kicks in the fall. He's not going anywhere. But Chabot is interesting because his no-trade clause kicks in July 1st. He's got a few years left on his deal at $8 million. Chychrun has 1 year left on his deal before he's a UFA. You have to make a decision on one of those guys. So if you're asking me, the goaltending is going to be hard to address because you got Korpisalo at 4 more years. You got Forsberg under contract for another year. It might be hard to address the goaltending. I think they should, but it might be hard. The one that I'm really interested in is how does the blue line shake out, and how do they clear that logjam of left shot D with Chabot and Chychrun?
Ian, it's always a treat to have you on the show. We really appreciate your time. Good luck in the lottery tonight on behalf of the Ottawa Senators. I would rather Ottawa win the lottery than San Jose or Anaheim because I would never get to see Celebrini play. We do morning radio. I got to go to sleep. Yeah. But if he's in Ottawa, at least we'll see him here in Toronto a couple of times a year.
Bring back the Battle of Ontario.
Yeah.
Amen.
My, The Battle of Ontario is dead if Toronto Radio is hoping for Ottawa to win the lottery.
Well, I never said win the lottery. He can go to Chicago, maybe a little bit better. But yeah, Celebrini in Ottawa, that would be interesting at least. Thank you very much for the time as always.
Yeah, you got it, guys. Have a great day.
All right, that's Ian Mendez from The Athletic. Were you teammates with both Antropov and Ponikarovsky back in the day?
Yep.
Like, those guys were like best friends.
Besties, buddy.
Like, they were linked nonstop everywhere
they went.
Brothers
from different mothers.
Wow.
Yes.
I remember watching some kind of segment that was done years ago on those two. And they, like, finish each other's sentences.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Sat beside each other in the room. Probably roomed with each other on the roads. Inseparable, man.
Who was your most common roommate when you were with the Leafs?
Common roommate? Man, I don't
it was a long that. Time ago. You are pretty old now, so. Like, I know you told me you roomed with Sundin for a period, right?
Well, that was the first game I got called up to one season. I walk in and I'm rooming with Matt Sundin. Man, who did I room with on the road?
Was it Yurke Lume?
No, it wasn't Yurke. I remember Alexander Havanov.
Okay. He
called Sasha Havanov. That was the weirdest experience I've ever had as a roommate.
Why is that?
Because it was the start of training camp, and he came in late to camp, and he literally walked in the room at like 4 o'clock in the morning, and I had no idea. I thought I was rooming by myself because this guy didn't show up. And all of a sudden, I look over to the bed, and I see, like, I didn't know who this guy looked like. I'd never met him before. And I see a completely, like, it looked like a stranger was in the bed, and I'm like, hey, can I help you? I think you're in the wrong room. And he goes, hey, I'm Alex. I was like, oh, hey, what's going on?
Alex,
like,
who?
Did not look like a hockey player. So, yeah, that was a weird one for sure.
That would do it. That would do it. All right. Well, more roommate stories perhaps tomorrow on First Up. You never know.
Oh, Ian White was my roommate.
Oh, Whitey? Love Whitey. Yeah. Great guy.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
Not Stephen Cronwall?
No.
Where am I coming Whitey. Up with these names? What's wrong with
know.
Me? A lot of
I
things.
I don't know.
A lot of things. Chris Johnston. We'll hear some of our conversation with CJ. The latest on Toronto's coaching search, perhaps the retention of Sheldon Keefe, and the idea of trading Mitch Marner. How challenging would it be for the Maple Leafs? That was CJ's next. Went outside during the commercial break, almost hit by a car. That would have been a really tough one for me. Aaron, how'd you break your legs? Well, got hit by a car in the TSN parking lot. Went the wrong way on the 401 and almost got hit by a car in the TSN parking lot. Quite the eventful morning for me and for Chris Johnston, who joined us earlier on Leafs Breakfast, our TSN hockey insider, and we're to play some of our conversation with CJ now. And we began it by asking him if he's heard anything for the reasoning from the switch from Thursday to Friday for the management press conference.
I don't know exactly why it was the case in terms of timing, but you know, I do think it's significant that Keith Pelley will be part of that availability along with Brendan Shanahan and Brad Treliving. And, you know, obviously there's been some, I don't know if it's speculation or rumors, people wondering about Shanahan's future. I think we can put that to rest pretty safely with the fact that, you know, his boss, Keith Pelley, will be appearing alongside him for that media availability. So, you know, it'll be an interesting one because it's the first time we've had a chance to talk to Pelley since, you know, he's taken his role with Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment. And obviously, you know, there's a lot to be learned about what the direction of the team's going to be. And, you know, between the three men that'll be sitting at the podium there, I mean, that's where those decisions will be made.
CJ, does it almost give you the indication that they move it back from Thursday to Friday because they want to give themselves an extra couple days to strategize a plan that a lot of people are probably not going to be happy with? Do it on a Friday so that they don't have to listen to people comment on whatever decision they come up with the next 2 days. Because it almost gives me the sense that they're going to tell people that they still believe in this group.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be curious to see about that. I mean, I'm sure they do. Look, there's lots of reasons to believe in the players. It's just, you know, I wonder about the plan of having them all together hasn't worked, right? I mean, you know, they're not crazy to say they believe in a group where you have, you know, Mitch Marner's been almost a 100-point player. Nylander was almost a 100-point player. John Tavares has had a fantastic career and still is point-of-game guy and very good two-way. You know, obviously, Auston Matthews, 69-goal season. I mean, it's not crazy to say you believe in the players. It's just, you know, whether it can all work together, I think, is a big question. And, you know, moving it from Thursday to Friday, quite honestly, it could just be a scheduling thing, for all I know. I don't read too much into that. But the fact that they didn't do it yesterday or even today, you know, right in the moment after the players and Sheldon Keefe spoke, I mean, I do think that there's some merit there, that it does give some time to make some decisions, to maybe give more of a concrete idea of where things are headed versus just react emotionally pretty quickly after a loss. And that's, you know, that's kind of what we got out of yesterday, right? I mean, there's not a whole lot to be said so soon, I think, after, you know, a loss like the one that they had Saturday night in Boston. So, you know, gives us a few more days to get ramped up for it, and then we'll see what Friday morning brings.
Chris Johnson, our guest, is your sense that we'll have clarity on Keefe's status by the time that Pelly, Shanahan, and Tree Living speak on Friday?
No one's told me that specifically, but I would have to believe that to be the case. I mean, you know, we saw in Seattle when they had their breakdown day after missing the playoffs. It took a couple weeks before they eventually made a coaching change. And when it, you know, got to the equivalent of this, when Ron Francis spoke there, he was basically saying they needed some more time to evaluate that decision. You know, I suppose that's an option here. But, you know, the difference is now we're into the second round. You know, obviously we have other teams now making coaching hires. You know, if you're in the Leafs shoes and you're inclined to move on from Sheldon Keefe, you know, there is only so much time, and there's danger in perhaps some of the candidates that might make the most sense being hired somewhere else. So there's sort of a time element to that decision in general, certainly if they're moving on. And I think there's also a fairness aspect here where, you know, if it is the, you know, ultimately decision that Sheldon Keefe won't be remaining a coach, I mean, you want to give him some opportunity as well to consider his own future. So, you know, I would think by Friday we'll have some resolution there. I don't know which way they're leaning, how that's going to play out, but it was pretty clear yesterday, you know, when Sheldon was at the podium that he doesn't yet know what the future holds. And obviously, you know, he's coached the team through five playoffs now, four of them end in the first round. We all see what's happening around the league where coaches are being changed at a alarming rate. I mean, it's fair to understand that there's a decision there. I just don't know what the decision is going to be.
Chris, the Toronto Maple Leafs, I think everyone would agree, will at least explore the possibility of breaking up the core four. And the most likely member of that, at least in my opinion, is Mitch Marner. And we know he has a no movement clause in his contract. What do you think that means for the likelihood of a trade?
Well, quite frankly, I don't think it's that likely. You know, it's my impression that, you know, Mitch Marner has that no movement clause, that he's, you know, playing out of his hometown for his hometown team. And I don't have any reason to believe that he wants to move on. Now, lots of things can happen. I mean, it would obviously be a big organizational decision if they ever thought that was necessary. And, you know, maybe after hearing certain things, that could change. I mean, it's hard to know what the future would hold. But, you know, as we enter this offseason, I don't have any reason to believe that any of the players that have no movement clauses with the Leafs, and that includes, you know, Matthews, Marner, Tavares, Nylander, and also Morgan Riley, I have no reason to think any of them want to be changed, nor, you know, do I know that management wants to change them. And maybe that, more than anything, will dictate another year of this, because, you know, it's not just whether they're traded this season. There's also the fact that, you know, you have Tavares and Marner both entering what could be a UFA season. How do they navigate that? So, you know, there's a lot of what I would call big decisions ahead for the team. And, you know, if all those players are back, I mean, the Leafs are committing, I think, 53% of their salary cap to four forwards next year, even with the cap jumping up. Obviously, new contracts for Nylander and Matthews take effect, and both of those players got raises. So the challenge of building out the group around them is even tougher than it's been in the past, I'd argue. And to me, that's been the biggest issue. The reason, you know, I think that they should have moved off the strategy is it's just too much money tied up in too few players. And, you know, whether it's the injuries that Matthews and Nylander had, whether it's just the possibility any players can go through a tough run during the playoffs. I think that they just don't, that they haven't had enough to surround those guys to have a long playoff run. And, you know, they obviously haven't even been close to that. They only got out of round one once, and that ended in five games.
And all they've been doing the last couple of years is finding new pieces to surround these guys. I just don't know how you can continue with this formula when you've seen it just can't work. And it'll be interesting to see how this whole thing plays out. I know there's a lot of people that want change and are speculating that there will be change. I don't see how change happens if you have the same people in charge making the decisions. Example, Brendan Shanahan, Brad Treliving, and Sheldon Keefe. Even though I don't advocate for Sheldon Keefe to be fired, but, you know, after a loss like this again this year, nothing is, you can't defend anything right now. Like, everything should be on the table for change with this group. But I guess my question to you is CJ, what was your reaction to some of the stuff or most of the stuff that you heard coming out of the players yesterday? And I know, you know, a lot of people like to take things out of context when things are said. You know, you got the Marner with the gods comment, and, you know, players saying, oh, we were close, and, you know, that they still believe in this group. But aside from Sheldon Keefe, and I actually look back and I actually saw Samsonov was another guy that actually took ownership for his play. The thing that I wanted to hear yesterday was these players take ownership for their lack of production, for not being able to come up in the big moment again. And it just seems like that's not what this group is capable of. They're just not able to take ownership for their play.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I think over time that's something I have noticed. I think sometimes if you had just stood up and said, look, you know, here we are talking after the first round again, we're, you know, our season's over, you know, I wasn't good enough, I've got to find a way to contribute more positively to the team's success. I mean, I think anything along those lines would go a long way. Samsonov, as you mentioned, did do that. He wasn't really asked any specific question that led him there. That was his own kind of doing, where he put his hand up and said he let in too many goals that shouldn't have gone in the net. And he was, you know, taking some ownership for what happened. I remember Ryan O'Reilly actually last year had kind of a similar reaction at the breakdown day. But, you know, it's not something, I guess, that everyone, maybe they don't believe it. You know, I can't tell you that you should say something that you don't think is true, but, you know, it does feel as though it's just a little routine. Like, I don't know what you can say on that day. I mean, obviously, if you're John Tavares or any of the players that have been here and you're being asked about, you know, your teammates, you're not going to get out in the media and say, well, actually, yeah, I do think we need to drop a bomb on this roster. I mean, realistically speaking, that's not something I think a player is going to say. You know, even in Marner's case, I understand people are dunking on the God comment. I think really he kind of fumbled that, but was just trying to say that they're treated really well in the market and that, you know, he loves playing in Toronto and that you know, fans.
Oh, no doubt. You know, it was the wrong word to use, especially.
But I just think people are taking any chance to take a run at him for that. I mean, look, we can criticize his play. We can say he didn't do enough in the playoffs. I think that's all fair game. But some of the stuff I saw I saw one newspaper cover that I thought was like a little.
Ooh, I've seen that.
Oh, no.
Over the top today, responding to that. Anyway, look, it's a tough time. It's a tough day. Like, I don't know, over all the years I've been at those things, I don't know if you ever really learn anything. But it is a final chance, I guess, to pick through the wreckage of a season. And, you know, it's happening far too early again here in Toronto. And you know, I'm with you. I'm at the point, I think they do need a change, but it just might not be possible as we enter this offseason if the players that may be changed out don't want to leave and they have the contractual right to stay.
Chris Johnson, TSN Hockey Insider. We posted the clip of CJ talking about Marner and the potential of him not being willing to move out of Toronto and stick with that no trade clause. That's picking up a lot of steam, as Carlo calls me on my phone for some reason. Not really sure why, because I'm looking at him. Anyways, I've got my FanDuel best bets coming up on the other side to wrap up this very busy Tuesday morning. All right, time now for today's best bets, powered by FanDuel. The Boston Celtics, game one in the Eastern Conference. They are an 11.5-point favorite tonight, hosting Cleveland. 11.5. I'll take the Cavs plus 11.5. I really like what I saw from Cleveland and Donovan Mitchell in their first round series against Orlando. That's a big number in a playoff round number two. I'm also going to take Dallas on the road plus four at the Oklahoma City Thunder, who did some serious work against New Orleans. Dallas beating out the LA Clippers, who were without Kawhi Leonard for the majority of the series. But I think the two dogs cover the number in the NBA tonight. And looking at the National Hockey League, the Rangers, once again, the underdog at home to Carolina. I think that's just wrong. The Rangers win again, and they go up 2-0 on the Canes. Today's best bets are powered by FanDuel. Download the FanDuel Sportsbook app today. Find thousands of ways to play. Please play responsibly. 19 plus and physically located in Ontario. Another day of golf for you and I today. Back-to-back days. Celebrating our good friend Derek Trouba's birthday.
Yep.
Imagine the Wizard of the White Claw will be feeling it today.
Yeah. He keeps bragging about these new irons that he just got. As if this guy needs help with his golf game.
Yeah, he's a scratch golfer. He's unbelievable.
Scratch golfer.
It's like our boy Josh at Hamilton Golf and Country Club. What a stud he is, by the way.
He is.
One of the great guys we've had the good fortune of playing golf with. We love Hamilton and cannot wait to get back there at the end of the month for the RBC Canadian Open, which was
I remember yesterday the fun conversation I had with him was right off the first tee. He's like, so how good of a golfer are you guys? I'm pretty good. Okay, what handicap do you play off? Well, I'm a zero. Well, okay, you're pretty good then.
Yep.
Off of one, this guy drains a 25-footer for birdie, and I'm like, oh, okay, this guy's going to shoot 69 today.
He did have a couple of bangs yesterday, including one on 15 and the one on one. No bangs for you and I, but... No. You call them bangs, birdies, bangs?
Bang!
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I call them bangs. Like my group at Caledon Woods, we call them bangs. How many bangs did you have today?
Nice. Just one. You mean that?
Yes.
You don't call them birdies.
No. Jeez. Ah, this is a family show. Okay. Yes, bang! When you drain a birdie putt, it's a bang now.
Yeah, it's funny when I catch people off guard, the new people that I play with, and I see them drain a birdie, I'm like, bang!
Bang!
Yeah, what's that for?
Why are you yelling at me?
What do you mean, man? Bang birdies, let's do it.
I know, I love that. I love that. That's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing. Well, hopefully there are copious amounts of bangs today at the golf course in which we're playing at. Looking forward to teeing it up and looking forward to tomorrow morning as well as we continue to talk about the NBA playoffs, Stanley Cup playoffs as well. Frankie will join us, probably fresh off zero sleep with his two children and late Sports Center work, so I'm sure he'll be in a delightful mood, as he always is. So thank you to Cam and 20 Fingers, and thank you to
happy
our audience.
Happy birthday to Cam.
And very happy birthday to Cam. I'm sure
he's
just taking a deep little day drink action on your birthday. That is how you ring in 26. We'll see what type of condition he's in tomorrow morning at 6 a.m.
Ciao.